Kof Beis Elul, Wednesday the 21st of September, Rabbi Pesach Kron, 9-11, 10 years on, what have we learned anything?
It's a great honor for me to have been invited once again to come to speak to all of you at Torah Way. I think Torah Way is one of the greatest inventions in Klal Yisrael. Some of you may know that Menachem David Saltzman is the one who created this idea in Manchester almost 9 years ago. And I just got off the phone with him and I told him, as I told him years before, that I would love to be able to start this in New York. Mit Hashem, hopefully one day we'll be able to do that. They always say England is 10 years behind America, but this time America is 10 years behind England. So we hope that we'll be able to accomplish it. I also want to thank Dov Harris from PAL, who's the one who brought me in, and of course Ruth Collins, who makes these gorgeous, gorgeous posters every single week. Duty Itzkowitz sends them to me every week, and I appreciate it. And of course, I just want to thank the Hachenbrochs, who are my host this year, and it's a pleasure to be with them. We've come together in very, very difficult, poignant times, a time of great introspection, for many, many reasons. First of all, it's Chodesh Elul, so every single year Elul is a time when a person has a Cheshbon HaNefesh, certainly everything that went on the past year, and hopefully that a person should be able to improve and have kapora for the upcoming year. Second of all, especially for an American, and especially for a New Yorker like myself, the 10th anniversary of 9/11 is a very, very moving event. You cannot imagine what it was to be in New York that day on 9/11, frightening, literally the most cataclysmic day in the history of America on American soil. Over 3,000 people killed, and America was changed forever. I'm sure that the whole world was changed forever. And certainly this year, in the aftermath of terrible, terrible tragedies, we all know Nebuch Rachman al-Islam, the Fogel family, was Eisgeschochten on a Friday night in Eretz Yisrael, the terrible catastrophe of Leiby Kletzky, and the mere fact that a Yid could do that to another Yid, and then again in Eretz Yisrael with Rabbi Lozabu Chatzira, who was also Nebuch murdered by a Yid. This is unheard of in Klal Yisrael. And so how do we cope with this? How do we understand this? So it occurred to me that we say in Mincha every Shabbos, Tzidkoscha kahare el mishpatecha tohim rabba. The way the pasuk is understood, the word el over here does not mean Hashem. El in this pasuk means strong, like Micha Moicha Ba'elam Hashem, or when we say in the Gemara called the Alim Gvar. So the simple meaning in the pasuk is Tzidkoscha, when we see righteousness, so when we see Hashem is doing all the wonderful good things for us, then we feel it is so blatant, kahare el, like the strong mountains. You go to Switzerland, you go to New Hampshire, you see the beautiful mountains, and they stand out. So when things are happening good to us, it's Tzidkoscha, Hashem's righteousness. Oh, I deserve all this. It's like the blatant mountains that stand out, your greatness, Hashem. But Mishpatecha, Rachman al-Tzlan, when Hashem has to make a Mishpat, then Tahim Rabbah, it's so deep that we cannot possibly understand it. And when we think about the Kletzky incident, or the Abu Chatzira incident, how in the world can anybody rationalize that? Why would Hashem do that? Din Mishpatecha, Hashem has a reason, but for us, it's Tahim Rabbah, it's very, very deep. However, just to say that it's deep and we don't understand it, is not enough. Why? Because the Gemara in Yevamos Samach Gimel Amud Aleph tells us, "Ein Peronius Bala Olam Ela Bishvil Yisrael." Peronius, any tragedy, any punishment that comes, Klal Yisrael has to learn something from it. So on one hand, Mishpatecha Tohim Rabbah, we cannot understand it, it's so deep, but there's got to be lessons from it, because Ein Peronius Bala Olam Ela Bishvil Yisrael. And so I want to show you a Gemara that in Mamish, a person can lose your breath from this Gemara, and as we'll see, the Taich and the Psukim in Tzifanya, which is mamish shocking. The Gemara is in Yevamos Samach Gimel Amud Aleph, and the Gemara tells us a number of Psukim in Tzifanya Gimel Pasuk Beis. Hashem is complaining about Klal Yisrael. Lo yishama b'koil, they haven't listened to my voice. Lo yilochu musar, they didn't take musar. And here's the key, b'Hashem lo yivatocha, they didn't have betochen in Hashem. El Elikeha, to their God, Loi Karova. They didn't feel close. They thought it was Kaychi Ve'atzim Yadi. They thought everything that they accomplished, whether it was finances or anything else, it was because of their own talent. They didn't have that betochen and that trust in Hashem. So now listen to the Pasuk, Tzfanya Gimel, Pasuk Vav, and this is what the Gemara brings in Yevamos. What am I going to do when Klal Yisrael has no betochen? What am I going to do when Klal Yisrael thinks it's all their own accomplishments? Hichirati Goyim, I would eliminate those nations. Noshamu Pinoisam, these are the two key words. Noshamu Pinoisam, the Metzudas David says, I will desolate HaMigdolim HaGavoyim. Could you believe that? That's what it says in the Metzudah is David. Metzudah Tzion. HaMigdolim HaGvayim, I'm going to desolate those tall towers. Hechrafti Chutzoysom, I will destroy the streets Mabli Oyver, that nobody will be able to walk there, as it was on 9/11. Nitzvu Areim, the city became ruins. Mibliish, Me'en Yoshev, nobody was able to be there. That's incredible. That's right in the Pasuk. It's so frightening that that's what the Pasuk says. When Klal Yisrael doesn't have betochen, Hashem sells you. That's the World Trade Center. That's the finances. You think finances are so great because you became so talented? Because it was Keichi B'yotzim Yodi? I'll show you. Just that place that you thought represented the finances of the world, Nashama Pinoisam. Amarti, the Pasuk says in Tzfanya, Pasuk Zion and Perigimel. Ach, Tiriyasi, take a look at me. Tikhi Musar, v'lo yikoris mine, and then your abode, your living place, will not be destroyed. So in other words, Hashem is telling us the first lesson is wake up and stop looking at yourself, but look at me. And I think that the first lesson that we have to learn is about betochen. What is betochen all about? So I want to share with you three incidents. And I'm only talking fast because I know that we have to stop at 9 o'clock. But if you listen to the tape, you'll be able to put it on a slow speed. But I think that, you know, that we'll be able to accomplish a lot if we move in this pace. Some of you who know me personally know that when I was 21 years old, my father never had yena machla and he passed away. And that's when I took over bris milah for my father, actually when he was still ill. And I supported my mother and brothers and sisters, you know, all their lives until they all got married. Now, when my father was ill, my brother and I, Rav Kalman and I, we went to Rav Schwab for Shabbos because my father was in a hospital near where Rav Shimon Schwab lived. And after we went to the hospital, after Musaf, after davening, we came back to Rav Schwab's house. And Rav Schwab said to me, "How's your father?" And I said to him, "I have betochen that he'll be well." Now, I was 20 at the time. 21 when my father eventually passed away, but Rav Schwab got very serious with me. And he said, "Betochen does not mean that your father's going to get well. Betochen means that Hashem has a master plan, and hopefully one day you'll live to understand it." And that's a very important element of betochen. It's crazy to say that only good things happen. When Chas V'Shalom somebody loses a spouse, or Rachmona Litzlan somebody loses a child, that's horrendous. That's terrible. Leiby Kletzky is horrendous. Abu Chatzir is horrendous. So the question is, at the end of time, we'll understand why Hashem did it. That's what betochen means. We have faith that Hashem knows what He's doing, but not that bad things don't happen, terrible things happen. At the end, we'll understand the master plan, then we can understand what the good was. But that's what betochen is, that a person doesn't get broken. And I always use the example, girls who want to go to a certain seminary. Those of you who have had girls who go to seminaries know that there's a lot of pressure. They want to be accepted into certain seminaries, and then if they don't get accepted into the one that was their first choice, they feel terrible. How am I going to get a shidduch? My reputation will be ruined. I'm not going to that seminary. And what happens? They go to another seminary, and they end up marrying the brother of their roommate. And then they understand why they were not accepted in the first seminary. Because Hashem was orchestrating this. That they have to be in the second seminary because that's how they're going to meet their shidduch. The brother of the girl who was their roommate. So sometimes we live long enough to understand what Hashem's master plan was. But that's what betochen is. Here's another thing that betochen is. In 1976, Rav Palm went on a little vacation. Rav Avraham Palm was Rosh Yeshiva Torah V'Das. And he writes this incident in his wonderful Sefer, Atara L'Melech, and it's written in a very easy Hebrew. It's on page 120. And he tells a story that it was the last day of this vacation that he and his wife were taking in the summer to relax a bit. His wife had already packed up everything, and all of a sudden he felt that he was going to faint. He felt dehydrated. And he said to her, "I need a citrus fruit. I've got to get some liquid in me, otherwise I'm going to faint." He felt very dizzy. So she didn't have anything in the refrigerator anymore because they had packed up. She ran to the next door neighbor, and the next door neighbor had a lemon. That was the only thing she had because she was also on the way out. So the Rebbetzin brought the lemon to Rav Palm. Now, if you knew him, he was a very soft, sensitive person, and he writes that he ripped open the lemon and he sucked out the juices because he was so afraid if he doesn't get the juice in him quickly, he'll faint. And it was very not conventional for him to do something like that, but he sucked out the juices and he was okay. He didn't faint. He writes a few days later, he saw one of his sons, and he said, you know, the other day I felt dehydrated, and Mama gave me this lemon, and I ripped it up, and I sucked out the juices in such a ravenous way, it's, I never saw anybody do it. And then as he's talking, he writes, as he's talking to his son, oy vey vey, I remember somebody, Taka, did that. He said it was 20 years before. He went to visit a Rav, he doesn't say who the Rav was, a Rav in a hospice. Nebuch, a hospice is a place where somebody is dying, and they just make him as comfortable as they can until Nebuch, the Yom HaPtira. And so he said, I was visiting this Rav, and I was thinking, what could I bring him? So I figured I'll bring him some fresh oranges. But he didn't want them. But right next to him, in the other bed, was another Yid who was Nebuch paralyzed from the chest down. He couldn't talk, but he could move his hands. So I figured if the Rav that I was visiting didn't want the oranges, maybe he would. So I turned to him and I said, would you like to have the oranges? And the poor guy was so thirsty and so hungry, he grabbed the oranges and he ripped it open and he sucked out the juices. So Rav Palm writes, what I did was a wonderful thing. I should have gotten paid from Hashem right away. Look what I did. I may have saved this guy. I certainly gave him hanah. But Hashem waited. Hashem waited 20 years until I needed the citrus juices. And that's when he paid me back. And then he brings a remarkable Arachayim HaKadosh. And we should all look it up, and there should be a tremendous chizuk for us. And that's what B'tochen is all about. He writes, in Shemois Chof, Pasik Vav, the Arachayim HaKadosh writes, V'oysa chesed la'alofim la'oyavay la'shermim, it's v'oysa d'eirusha does chesed, sometimes for thousands of generations later. And listen what the Ohr HaChaim writes. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu Meshalem LeKol Chasdei Tekef HaMiyad. The Rebbeinu Shlom does not pay you back right away. I know many of you here, wonderful, good people. And a person could think, look, if I'm so wonderful, so how come I don't have the fancy house my neighbor has? Or how come I don't have the fancy SUV, or I can't afford the vacation that my neighbor has? The Eibusha says, I'm going to take that instance of paying him back, sometimes l'dayres, for his children or his grandchildren. And the Eibusha is going to pay back when that person in your future generations needs it. How many times does it happen you're driving in the car and you feel the accident is coming, you know you can't stop, and you're bracing yourself. And the last second you stop on a dime and the accident doesn't happen. You know why? Because 35 years ago Yosef did something special. And Hashem said, I'm not going to waste payment and give him an SUV or give him a bungalow colony someplace that'll have a second home. I'm going to wait till his grandson is on the car in the highway and he could, chas v'shalom, get hurt seriously. That's when I'll pay him back. And that's what B'tochen is. That when we do good things, we shouldn't be worried, Hashem, how come you're not paying me back? Hashem has a scorecard, as they say. A scorecard, Hashem keeps score and he will pay back. That's B'tochen. That person doesn't get lost. That kid who forgot his Gemara and didn't go to Sabaros, he was on the way to Sabaros. But he remembered that he forgot his Gemara. How did that happen? One day, he never forgot his Gemara before. But because his bubby did something 35 years before. And Hashem said, I'll wait. I'll save her grandson. I'm not going to waste the schar on something that's only temporary. That's the second aspect of B'tochen. And the third aspect of B'tochen is something that was taught by Rav Mordechai Schwab. Rav Mordechai Schwab, who was the brother of Rav Shimon Schwab. So he told over an amazing thing. he had the Talmud. His name was Rav Zev Smith. Rav Zev is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. There are many tapes today of the Halacha Shiurim that he gives in New York. So he was a Talmud of Rav Schwab. And he used to go visit his Rebbe every Yontif, every Chol HaMoed. This went on for years, even after Zev Smith had a large family. He used to come Chol HaMoed. Near the end of Rav Mordechai Schwab's life, when the family knew that it was Sukkos, Chol HaMoed Sukkos, that Zev Smith was going to come, and Rav Schwab was already very, very sick, so they called Zev Smith and they said, Rabbi Smith, we know that you're coming on Chol HaMoed and you're welcome to come with your family. But we just want to warn you that the Rebbe looks so frail and he's so pale and he's so sickly that you may not even recognize him. So we just want to prepare you for what he looks like. And Rabbi Smith told me he went Chol HaMoed prepared, he thought, for what his Rebbe would look like. And when he walked in, he almost didn't even recognize him. He was so skinny, Nebuch. And he was so pale and he was so frail. And Rav Schwab, who was brilliant, took one look at Zev Smith when he walked in and saw how shocked he was. And he said to him, Zosvisin ichleb besimcha, I'm living with happiness. And he said like this, he said, I couldn't go to shul Yom Kippur. I couldn't daven. He says, you don't think I would want to go to shul Yom Kippur? But the one who made me sick is Hashem. I didn't make myself sick. And if that's the case, ichleb chayem b'rtzoinoi. Listen how he types, b'derech drush kirega ba'apri chayim b'rtzoinoi. Chayim, I am living b'rtzoinoi with his will. God didn't want that I should go to Yom Kippur davening. If that's what he wanted, I'm okay with it. I'm not going to be upset. I can't daven, not because I don't want to daven, because he doesn't want me to daven. And if he doesn't want me to daven, I'm okay with that. That's betochen. That no matter what the situation is, that's what he wanted. He says, I can't learn anymore because I get headaches if I try to concentrate. He says, you don't think I want to learn? But I can't learn because Hashem made it that my mind has headaches if I learn. So if that's the case, chayim b'rtzoinoi. I just heard a word recently from a woman, a Rebbetzin in New York, Rebbetzin Aviva Feiner. She said a tremendous word. She said, every day we make the brocha, she'asa li kol tzarchi. The Eibushter provided all my needs. She said, no mefarshim say that in case there's a financial problem, you don't make that brocha. Or in case a girl didn't find her shidduch, she doesn't make that brocha, she'asa li kol tzarchi. Part of betochen is from what I need for that day, she'asa li kol tzarchi. Avada, everybody's allowed to be misfollowed, that the finances should be better, the shidduchim should come, the children should be wonderful. But for what I need today, that's what betochen is, she'asa li kol tzarchi. It is not allowed to be broken. Whatever situation we find ourselves, avada, we can try to improve it, and we should try to improve it. But whatever the situation is, as long as we've done our Ishbablus, we have betochen she'asa li kol tzarchi. That's the first lesson. As the Pasuk says in Tzfanya, the Eibushter said, you didn't have betochen, I'll give you a wake-up call. And I take down the towers, so that you look at me, don't look at yourself. That's the first lesson of betochen. The second lesson, I believe, is that we know life is tenuous. Life is tenuous, we don't know what tomorrow brings. How many stories were there that people that were not supposed to be there went there that day? How many stories there were people that were supposed to be there didn't go there that day for whatever reason? So we see, we don't know what tomorrow brings. So I want to share with you a word that we say in Slichas so often. And Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik told over this story. He was once, as a 6-year-old boy, he was davening together with his Zayder, Rabbi Elia Prusin and Rabbi Elia Feinstein. The Feinsteins and Soloveitchiks are related to each other. So as a 6-year-old boy, he was saying Slichas with his Zayder. So we all know that when it comes to Shema Kaleinu, the open up during Kodesh, and everybody screams it out loud. So we've seen these 6-year-olds, these Tyra and the Shamas, that they daven out loud just like the people standing next to them. So the little boy is yelling, Shema Kaleinu, Hashem Alekeinu, Chuz Verachem Aleinu, Vakadu Verachem Verotzen Esfil Aseinu. Fine. Hashveinu Hashem Elecha V'Noshu V'Chadu Shemeinu Kikeda. Then came the next pasuk. And it's interesting. The little boy was 6, but it's Rabbi Aaron Soloveitchik, obviously a genius. So he knew the types of the next pasuk. He just didn't feel it was negeah to him. What is he talking about? He's 6 years old. So he didn't say it. This was Azag Yishmak. So afterwards, his Zayder, Rabbi Elia Prusiner, goes over to him, Aaron, I saw it was that pasuk, you didn't say it. That was with Azag Kavona. So he started laughing. He said, Zayda, you know, I'm 6 years old. What's it got to, what lay Zikna? What has it got to do with me? So he said, let me tell you. And he said something so deep. He said, Antashachena liye Zikna doesn't only mean to old age. He said, it's the mindset of old age. What happens when a person gets older? A project comes to his doorstep, or something, and somebody gives him an idea. He says, look, I'm too old. It's not for me. Get somebody else. I can't do this anymore. I'm out of here. I paid my dues. Now, when an old man says that, we can understand it. But sometimes a young man says, listen, forget somebody else. I don't want to do it. I'm too tired. You know, I'm too busy. That's the mindset of an old man. A person has to always be willing to accomplish. A person can't act like an old man. I'm too tired. I'm too busy. You know, let somebody else do it. Al tash l'cheinu l'yei zikna. Don't cast me away. L'yei zikna. To that mindset of an old person. That's what it means. You know, there's something else that struck me very, very much. And that is, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is telling Klal Yisrael through Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of time. This is in Azinu, in Dvarim Lamed Beis, Pasuk Lamed. Eicha yirdoif echad elaf. How is it going to happen that Nebuch, when Klal Yisrael is not following Hashem, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam gives a curse to Klal Yisrael? that one person is going to chase away thousands. Ushnayim yonisu avov, and two people will chase away tens of thousands. That's the curse. When a few people can affect tens of thousands. When you think about it, how many were really involved in bringing down the Twin Towers? Osama bin Laden for sure, Yamach Shemoy v'Zichroi, all his henchmen, how many advisors could he have had? 20? 30? How many pilots were there? 5 or 10 or 20 guys that were on the planes? They must have kept it secret. They were probably afraid that other people would find out about it. So let's say 200 people were in the inner circle that eventually planned this and brought it down and did the whole thing. 200 people affected millions all over the world. For 10 years, it's still affecting us. Every time we go to the airport and have to take off our belt and take off our shoes, it's all because of those serpents of death. It's all because of those terrible Rishoyim that changed the way we think forever. So Chazal teach us, Mida Toiva, Yisera al Mida Puronios, Achas al Chomesh Meyos. Good, Devishtha allows people to do chesed and does good 500 times more than he does bad. So if that's the case, if a few people were able to affect so many in a bad way, imagine how a few people could affect in a good way if we really got together to do something positive. And I want to show you what it means. Some individuals that you all know, but maybe never think about. Think about this guy, Michael Rothschild. Michael Rothschild is the one who had the brainchild, the brainstorm, to have the Tisha B'Av video. So I remember when he first started, a number of years ago, maybe 20 years ago, he calls me up, he says, how would you like to speak in front of 10,000 people? I said, Michael, what are you, crazy? What, are you going to rent down Madison Square Garden? And, you know, I'll speak there? He says, take it easy. Let me give you my idea. He says, you're going to go to the Beis Yaakov of Brooklyn. We're going to get two cameras. We're going to film you. And then on January 1st, or one of these national holidays, when people are off, we're going to send this video to every shul, to every Jewish community center. And then we're going to send it to every camp in the summertime. So that which you are speaking in front of 200 girls, eventually could be seen across America. And any place where there's a Jewish community center or a Yiddish community that has off on these national holidays, and we'll show this video. Well, that was an idea. Who ever thought about that before? And Taka, that first year, Taka, a few thousand people saw it. Today, the Tisha B'Av video is seen without exaggeration to 70,000 Yidden all over the world. To the point where some people sometimes come over to me and say, Rabbi Krohn, you know, now I look forward to Tisha B'Av. You know, we all know, we remember, right, Joe? We remember when we were growing up, Tisha B'Av was one of the worst days of the year. It was hot, the fast was long, there was nothing to do. Now, I feel like I'm getting inspired. I can't wait. Okay, one man changed it. See, I go to my door, it's a regular American kid. Well, he grew up in Canada. Take a look at Meir Zlotowitz and Nasser Sherman. American boys. In 1976, they had a friend, Meir Fogel, Rahman al-Islam, he passed away, a young man, he had no children. So Meir Zlotowitz decided, you know what, Lezecha Nishmas, his friend, what he's going to do is he's going to write Megillas Esther. And he was a great artist, Meir Zlotowitz. I remember in camp, he used to make all the banners. So for Panasa, he used to make plaques, and he used to make certificates. That's what it was called, art scroll. He made scrolls of art for dinners and for shuls. So that's where the name art scroll comes from. But he figured, you know, on the side, he'll write Megillas Esther commentary, and he got Nelson Sherman to write an overview. And when it came out in 1976, it turned over the Yiddish Welt. Nobody ever saw anything presented so beautifully using only Jewish commentaries, not secular commentaries. And they sold thousands and thousands. They never thought of writing anything except Megillas Esther. But when that took off like wildfire, they decided, hey, you know what? Maybe for Shavuos we'll put out Rus. And so they started putting Rus. Kehelas took a year later because that was much longer. And then for Tisha B'Av they put out Eicha. It was incredible. And the whole world changed. And there's not one Orthodox Jew in the world, who speaks English who doesn't have at least one Magid book. And one Oscar book. I wish everybody has a Magid book. I can't believe I said that. But okay, what I meant to say is an Oscar book. Right? Everybody has a Shas. Then everybody has the Mazorim. I'll tell you a story, you won't believe it. Somebody saw Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, the Philadelphia Rosh Hashiva. He was using an art scroll master on Rosh Hashanah. So one of the Talmidim went over to him and said, Rebbe, aren't you a little embarrassed to use an English master on Rosh Hashanah? So listen up, Shmuel, who's the ablest person in the world. He says, "Come here, I want to ask you something." He says, "Do you see this piyut? This piyut? Do you look at the words? You know what it means?" Guy said, "No." He said, "I don't know either. When I daven, I like to know what I'm reading." So Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky, "Well, what's the embarrassment? So why not? Why shouldn't we be preparing with our sidurim, with our minds before Yom Tov to read, you know, b'chol maminim, and to read all these beautiful adei adim lechemelech elyon? What do the words mean? We sing them and we say them. We don't know what in the world we're talking about. Look, two guys, two American boys, changed the world. A Menachem David Zaltzman, this Torah way. What a fabulous idea." I spoke to him, I asked him, "What gave you the idea?" He said, "You know what, I was thinking, there's no shiurim in the morning. Only old men who don't go to work, they have some shiurim. Everybody else, rushing to work." So 10 years ago, he decided, "You know what, I'll have a shiur done, and a person on the way to work can get it. And then later, call a lushing, got involved, and put it on the radio. Today, you could go on totalway.com or whatever it is. There's shiurim on a shiur in Manchester and London, and I really feel that I want to start it in New York." I told him he's coming November, Mitzvah Hashem, to New York. We want to start it. It's a fabulous, one man thought of it. And I'll tell you two more things. Just an incredible thing. In America, a number of years ago, there were three women. Bronnie Rosen was the head of them. A woman in Borough Park, Nebuchadnezzar, they had no children. And they decided, you know, they need a support group. There's so many people, Nebuchadnezzar, that have no children. And they all had to go to Goyisha sources and the Goyisha websites. So these three women who had no children decided they are going to start something called A-Time. A-Time stands for a Torah Infertility Media Exchange. They opened up a website, they opened up a telephone number, and they got ideas from Hamish doctors and even Goyisha doctors. But the idea was like this, it was filtered through Yiddish sources. They were able to get medications that people needed. And all of a sudden they started this fabulous organization, and incredibly, within a year, all three had children. When they started, not one of them was pregnant. And they had been married for years already. But today, between A-Time and Boni Olam, it's unbelievable. Thousands of children have been born. Tens of thousands of grandchildren will be born. And it's a credit of three individuals. Now, all of us have had great ideas. But sometimes we just don't believe in ourselves. So we don't think that we can change the world. But anybody can change the world. Anybody, you take a chavrutza, you have an idea. I'll give you a small example. When I went to visit Rav Shamsa Folhish's Kever in Frankfurt, I noticed that his wife was 4 years older than him. So I pointed to everybody. I said, "Look, this man married somebody that was 4 years older than him." And when they asked him how he could do that, he said, "Because for what I have to accomplish in life, I can't marry a child." So I came back to America and I started talking about it. At the Thermosar Convention, there were 700 women, Shalosh Shudas, and I said, "Listen, all your mothers that are involved in Shidduchim, I'm telling you, you can let your sons go out with older girls. There's nothing wrong with it. Besides, when a girl first comes back from Eretz Yisrael, she's convinced she's Rachel Amenu. So she has to be deprogrammed for a little while. So if you get a girl that's 22 or 23, she'll make a better wife, she'll make a better mother, she's a better friend, she can get a better job. There's nothing wrong with a girl that's 24 or 25. So there was one woman that was sitting there. I didn't know that she was sitting there until a few weeks later. She calls me up afterwards. She says, "You know, Rabbi Krohn, I was never at a Torah Masorah convention. And I'm a Mechanechas. This year, Hashem orchestrated that I should go. And my son is supposed to go out. He was supposed to go out with a girl that was 2 years older than him. I never would have allowed him to do that. But then I heard what you said, and that girl is a direct descendant of Rav Shamsa Folhish. So I decided it can't be. I can't believe that Hashem orchestrated that. He should be Reda Shidduch, Rav Shamsa Folhish is, you know, descendant, and you say this thing." I told him to go out. I didn't say how old she was. I just said, "She's older than you." And what happened? They got engaged. So the boy side called, the girl side called, and then already I spoke about it on the Tisha B'Av video. And to make a very, very long story short, over 750 Shidduchim have been made that way already. Since a few years ago. Not only that, the two main shadchanim in Lakewood, a fellow Rabbi Lewinstein and a fellow Rabbi Levy, they told me, the attitude has changed in America. There's nothing wrong now with going out with an older girl. As a matter of fact, last night, I was sitting with a girl here in London, and she said to me, "I'd rather go out with a younger boy. They're more levedic. You know, they're not so staid anymore." So that's great. And that's what you should all know. And every girl that's in the 20s should not panic. Just the opposite. A guy who's young, he can go on with an older girl. And I'm telling you, we just don't have the time. But I'll show you that the shidduch problem could be solved to such a degree if guys would go out with girls their own age. Because every single year, boys and girls are born the exact same amount. So I'll just tell it to you very quickly. In the year 2000, for example, 10,000 boys, 10,000 girls. 2001, 11,000 boys, 11,000 girls. Every year. 2002, 12,000 boys, 12,000 girls. But now, if a boy in 20 years from now, 21 years from now, who was born in 2000, wants a girl that's 2 years younger than him, so what happens? There were 10,000 boys born his year, but there were 12,000 girls born the year she was born. So it's impossible. There's 2,000 girls that can't find shidduchim because there's just no boys around. But if everybody marries the same age, there's no problem. There's no more girls than boys. It's a fallacy. It's a mishigas goes. We're so convinced that the boy has to be 3 years older than the girl. We know very well that the girls sometimes are more mature than the boys. So adarabah, it's no problem. So that was my idea. And Baruch Hashem, it's changed. It's changed the attitude. So again, that's how we have to manage that. These are some of the lessons that I believe that we can learn. The idea of betochen, the idea that we don't know what tomorrow brings, we shouldn't get caught into the mindset of liyezikna, and more important than anything else, believe in yourself. Just like those 200 Rishayim, they should all be wiped out from the face of the earth, we're able to change the world. David allows us 500 times more to change the world if we want to do good things. We all have great ideas. Take them, believe in yourself. The Tzitzkas HaTzadik says, you got to believe in three things. The Torah, Hashem, and yourself. David should help. We should learn from these lessons and accomplish for Klal Yisrael. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening. And a good job.